First, there were rumors. Now there's action. China will officially ease its draconian zero COVID measures. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. We'll start with a check of the numbers because that decision from Beijing to loosen strict COVID restrictions has helped ignite a rally in financial markets. Hong Kong's tech-heavy Hang Seng Index surged nearly 8% in today's session. The Shanghai Composite rallied 1.6%, while the Chinese currency rose 1% against the dollar to its highest level since late September. Optimism has also spread to Japan, where the Nikkei rose nearly 3% today. And that momentum is continuing across Europe, where benchmarks are also on the rise. It's helped here by new EU economic growth forecasts. From Beijing, the BBC's Stephen McDonnell explains what China's new COVID guidelines are.
China remains a long way short of reopening to the outside world, but the announcement of an easing of strict zero COVID measures on several fronts is being interpreted as a key step forward. Inbound passengers will now only be required to do 5 days hotel quarantine plus 3 days at home, down from 7 and 3 days. Airlines will no longer be suspended for several weeks if they bring in more than 5 passengers who test positive. This will mean more flights into China and ticket prices will come down. Inside China, close contacts of those who are infected will no longer be quarantined, but those who've had first-hand contact will still be isolated.
That's the BBC's Stephen McDonnell reporting from Beijing there. Well, those lighter restrictions will probably be welcome news for many across China, but the economic impact of nearly 3 years of harsh controls is already being felt. That is not welcome news for e-commerce behemoth Alibaba, which today marks Singles Day. It's the biggest shopping day of the year, not just in China, but in the world. Preliminary data, though, from research firm Cinton show sales are nearly 5% lower so far than last year. James Yang is a partner at Bain & Company in Shenzhen. He told me how the economy is affecting people's willingness to spend.
There is weakening economic growth. The retail sales number back in September was only up 2.5% year on year. So that's not great. Consumer confidence is very low. And that really all lands into, you know, Singles Day, where there's a lot of focus on, because it's a key barometer of how Chinese consumers are feeling. Really, it's all about raising the bar and having companies really win customer loyalty for sustainable growth.
And that's what's really interesting, this concept of loyalty, because Singles Day hasn't really ever focused so much on trying to win customers back. It's just been sort of a cast the net wide and appeal to whoever and whomever wants to buy products, right?
Yeah, and I think it was great for the initial part of the growth stage, right? Singles Day was launched more than a decade ago. So it was really great for that part of it, just getting people excited. But I think as that festival has matured, we really need to think about more sustainable ways of growing it. And I think it's more than just deep discounts, because I think every single metric that we look at points towards that this easy growth, over 70% of the shoppers this year in our survey says they're going to shop across multiple platforms. And that's a 20% pointage jump versus last year. So everyone's bargain hunting. And then when you match that with the macro headwinds, people would want to spend less, right? 34% of the consumers plan to spend less in this year's Singles Day, which is also much higher than last year.
You sort of alluded to this, but it's a fairly crowded field. It's not just Alibaba that's doing Singles Day. You know, we have all these other platforms that have launched their own sort of pre-holiday shopping bonanzas. So when we look at the consumer level, is there a way that, I guess, have retailers changed the way they're advertising to consumers to try to get them to their platforms?
Absolutely. The ones that have invested beyond having a cheap price are the ones that are winning the loyalty. Like, they get real credit and they get points for having a great product offer, having a wonderful loyalty program. You'll see a lot of other retailers happening that are grow very quickly. You like their sales just jump off the page, but they haven't built a credible proposition beyond low prices. And when that's missing, you can't really build long-term loyalty.
When we think about the zero COVID strategy and lockdown measures and all of that, as far as logistics go, once people have made all these purchases on a day like Singles Day, what happens then? What is sort of the logistical process in making sure that all those products do get to the people who bought them on time?
Yeah, supply chain is massively complex, especially when it comes to the millions of packages that they have to deliver over Singles Day and very quickly, right? The time windows when we talk about in China, we're talking about 1 to 2 day delivery windows maximum, right? We're not talking about 7 to 10 days. And so what you'll notice is the platforms have done a lot of work, and this is not just this year, but starting from a couple of years ago since COVID-19 started, is splitting up their supply chains and having backup plans. So it's much more scattered in the way that they flow. They have volumes and storage, and so that they really can be more agile and flexible in the way that they ship the part, the shipments out. I think from when you talk to those platforms and retailers, they're still very optimistic about getting to everything on time.
James Yang, a partner at Bain & Company in Shenzhen. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
To India now, where U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has been meeting with government officials today to try to bolster bilateral relations. Secretary Yellen's meetings are continuing at this hour, but the BBC's Nikhil Anamdar explains what we know so far about her talks.
She actually met some business leaders at the Microsoft Research Facility in the outskirts of Delhi early in the morning. And there she spoke about how India and the U.S. are natural allies. And she's also met with Nirmala Sitharaman, who is the finance minister. There's been no statement yet from both sides, but that's expected in the evening after the India-U.S. Economic and Financial Partnership Dialogue. So it's likely to focus on things like deepening trade and economic ties, as well as other issues on climate finance, for instance, or India's G20 presidency, which the U.S. will be showing support for.
The message today and this week is that India and the U.S. are sort of coming together. But earlier this week, India's foreign minister was in Moscow, and he said that his country is going to continue buying that discounted Russian crude even after EU sanctions go into effect. I mean, surely that's going to put some sort of strain on U.S.-India relations, no?
You know, India is the third largest consumer of oil. It doesn't have a population that's high income, and it needs the affordable sources. Russian oil now actually constitutes about 20% or more of India's overall oil imports, as opposed to under 1% before the war. So India doesn't look like it's any mood to sort of dilute its relationship with Russia. It's very clear that the US and other Western allies of India have accepted that there's been a long-standing and deep relationship that India has shared with Russia. And so it's unlikely that, India's position is going to change very much, despite the pressure.
And there's another sort of elephant in the room, and that's China in these talks. The U.S. sort of choosing its battles to fight with India, and it looks like it sort of picked China.
And I think, you know, the big focus is going to be on trade and economics, but also on ways to counter China. And also, I think India and the U.S. are part of several groupings. For instance, the Quad group of countries or the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework. These are all seen as counter to China. And Yellen has also said that, you know, this relationship is only deepening as a result of the global economic turmoil in Ukraine, for instance, that was drawing the two countries together. There are some reports that she said that the U.S. was working to strengthen India's friendshoring role. So this is essentially a geo-economic strategy where global supply chains between friendly countries are more deeply integrated.
The BBC's Nikhil Anamdar for us in Mumbai. Thanks so much for breaking this down.
Thank you.
Finally, a film 90 years in the making is finally hitting the silver screen. It's produced by a UK social club called the Bradford Movie Makers, and it's their very first cinema release. It's called A Bunch of Amateurs, and it chronicles the cash-strapped group and its movie-making endeavours.
Right, the accounts. We've got £340 at the bank.
We're in desperate straits, really.
We can't pay as rent. That's the most important bit, isn't it, really?
Yeah, we're going to run out of money.
Well, that's a little taste of a trailer of the film there. Critics have been delighted by the documentary, which they say shows age, illness, and dilapidated premises in the northeast of England are no constraints on creative ambition. I've popped a link to the trailer if you'd like to have a look. I'm at Victoria Craig. Our producers this week are Stephen Ryan, Roy Clayton, Elizabeth Hudson, and Nisha Patel. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.